Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about your car problems. We can talk about your neighbors. We can talk about your friends, maybe the brother-in-law that thinks he knows it all. We can talk about anything you want as long as there's vroom vroom involved, okay? The phone number is 602-508-0960, so if you want to give us a call, now is the time, because the lines get a little tied up later on, but we move through pretty quickly, so that's kind of good. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. There's hardly a week that goes by that I don't get a call from somebody who's a very happy customer of Quality Transmission. Just the other day, a guy said some 18 months later, they redid a job because they determined they didn't do it right the first time and warranty was never an issue, and he thought that was pretty amazing. They're very knowledgeable, Bob and his staff. They'll save you money, and the reason I recommend Quality Transmission is because he's not wanting to rebuild everything that walks in the door, and he doesn't want to slide one of his so-called heavy-duty units into your car on every time you come in. So the idea is fix the problem. Sometimes the problem is external to the transmission, and really it's a wiring harness or it's a solenoid. So there's lots of that kind of stuff. Quality Transmission does clutch repairs, driveline, drive axles, CV boots replacements. Quality Transmission is located on McClintock, just north of University in Tempe, between University and the 202. And Tom O'Kane is sitting here next to me. He owns Action Auto up at 21st Avenue and Deer Valley. Is that east or west of the 17?
Actually, thank you for having me, but it's 27th Avenue in Deer Valley. We are just west of I-17 on Deer Valley.
Okay, like a block, two blocks, three blocks?
Three doors.
You're kidding.
Three doors off the freeway.
Okay, all right. And I've known you. When did you work for John Rang?
Oh, that was in the 80s.
Okay.
Because I was still a young kid then.
Okay. and John was an equipment salesman.
Correct.
And he sold scopes, engine analyzers. Of course, we don't use those anymore. But back then, we used them. And he sold wheel balancers. And what else did he sell?
Brake lays, lifts.
Everything.
Whatever he could get out of your pocket.
Yeah. And you know, John, I've always admired him. He's a salesman extraordinaire.
I love him.
I mean, he could sell anything to anybody. I remember one time there was two kinds of scopes. There was a Bear and an Allen. And he looked me in the eye. He didn't even know me. And he goes, "If you buy that Bear, then you'll be making the biggest mistake of your life."
His convictions ran deep.
Yeah, that's right. But to this day, I like him. He's a good friend, and he's a nice guy, but he has passion. It's probably a little deeper than most of us, but he has passion.
That's right.
And then when I bought my second Bear scope, then I invited him to come over and take a look at my new equipment, and he told me he came close to using bad words then, but that was about it.
He says, "How could you make the same mistake twice?"
Yeah, exactly. Now, did you install hoist for him and that kind of stuff?
No, I was strictly diagnostic.
Okay. So you helped everybody with their new, and what did those scopes used to cost?
Oh, they were $30,000.
Easy $30,000. Yes. And back then you could buy a house almost for $30,000.
Absolutely.
And these scopes, of course, they did everything back then. Now, does the Allen scope, did it have DIS or coilover ignition capabilities or not?
Yes.
It did, so they can still use those today.
Yeah.
Do you have an Allen?
No, I do not.
Okay, all right. All right, just testing you.
Times have changed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we use the one big engine analyzer, the scope. Everybody knows it as a scope. We use it just for the oscilloscope to watch wavelengths on sensors and stuff like that.
Yeah, pretty much today we're all going handheld.
Yeah,
smaller boxes.
Because we understand the circuit, and we don't need that thing to walk us through the diagnostic process.
And it's nice to take the thing out for a drive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Put it right in the seat alongside you.
Well, sometimes if they leave the tailpipe probe from the scope into the car, they'll oftentimes take the scope down the street. Have you ever had that happen?
I've seen it done.
Yeah. That's right. Folks, you have to understand there's this big, huge box that stands 5, 6, 7 feet tall.
By about 5 feet wide.
5 feet wide. Has a big TV screen. And it's all full of computers and all kinds of
and
stuff.
And wheels.
And it has wheels. And so you take this J-hook, so to speak, and you hook the tailpipe so you're going to read the vehicle emissions. If it happened, it had to happen once a month to us, where somebody would forget the tailpipe probes on there. They'd back the car out of the bay. And, of course, the cord was pretty long. And then they'd drive away, dragging the scope behind them.
It was a very expensive mistake.
Oh, it was. That's, you're being kind.
But gave everybody the idea, why not take it with you?
Callers those, Ernie, then Paul.
Those were the good old days, weren't they, though?
Oh, they were
They
fun.
Were good old days. All right, Tom's the one up at Action Auto that I tell you that's a heck of a fisherman. Heck of a fisherman. And you said you were fishing muskie in New Mexico.
Muskies in New Mexico.
Seriously?
Yes, tiger muskies.
Okay, tell me about it.
Well, the tiger muskie is a cross between a northern pike and a muskie.
Okay.
And they're a sterile fish. They don't breed. They don't reproduce.
Have a pretty boring life, I suspect.
Why? Well, I don't really care about their evening hours. It's just when I'm out chasing them around, all I care about what they're
up to. Yeah. Around. And why are they in the lake?
Well, fishermen will leave their minnows, their suckers, their goldfish, if they're fishing with them. They'll leave them behind, and then the suckers will get in there and destroy the trout spawning beds.
Okay.
So they put the muskies in there to take care of them.
So it's
suckers.
A predator fish.
Oh, it's a very, yeah. Yes.
And how big is it, tail to nose?
Well,
is it like the wild tunas or whatever?
I got 50 inches easy.
50 inches?
Yeah.
Do you ever watch that wild tuna or whatever that show is called on TV?
Not too much.
Okay. Well, you've seen him pull some of those big.
Oh, absolutely.
I saw him the other day pull an 800-pound tuna on board.
And then you got a battle.
Oh, yeah. It's hours. Hours and hours. All righty. Ernie, good morning to you, buddy. How can we help you this morning?
Well, I have a 2001 Chrysler Concorde that was bought brand new in Arizona, and I just recently, last year, after 11 years, of suggestion was made that I change all the fluids in the car. Okay. And I decided to go about doing that. I had them all done, not cheap, but did it because the car was old and it's in great condition. It's only got 25,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And I proceeded to have an oil change this spring when I brought the car back. I'm a snowbird.
Okay.
And they were telling me how the fluids were dirty. And I thought to myself, geez, for 11 years, I never had the fluids changed. Now I automatically changed them. Not automatically, yeah. I changed them. And with the idea of, you know, I should be okay for at least 3 or 4 years. And now I'm told they're already dirty.
Okay.
Now,
All right. Well, is it the same shop?
No, it happened. One was a dealer, now one's
okay.
A shop.
All right. You want to comment on that?
I would get a second opinion.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It is certainly possible that the fluids are dirty again because, you know, when you go through and you drain, you know, a component like a transmission or a differential.
Yes.
You know, some of that dirt or pan wash will stay behind, which could cause the fluid to start changing again. But it doesn't sound right, and I would get a second opinion.
Yeah, it's kind of a sticky situation, and I agree with Tom. First of all, I tell all my customers, if we're going to flush your brake fluid, don't think it won't look like iced tea in a short period of time, because we cannot flush the solid material, which I'm going to refer to as mud, in the bottom of the four calipers and in the master cylinder. I can't get that out. So my whole purpose is to change the fluid. I'm not going to create turbulence like a dishwasher inside your brake system. I'm not going to make it, you know, clear, what color is that, amber? Clear amber color. I can't do that. So beware of you go someplace else and they say, oh, your fluid's dirty. But you're going to know that I've got new fluid, so there's no moisture content, there's no copper content, and it's not contaminated fluid. So you'll know it's okay. I agree with Tom, too. On a transmission, if you do a flush, then they shouldn't have said that. The second shop shouldn't have said that. Now, you could do this. You could take it back to the dealer and say, you know, somebody said this. I would like you to get a white piece of paper and take my dipstick on my transmission and hit the white piece of paper here, and then get bring a can of the transmission fluid out here and dab it here. I want to see this the contrasting difference. If there is no difference, I probably wouldn't use that second shop ever again.
Okay.
And I want to tell you something. In our industry, there's a lot of guys that are struggling right now.
I believe that. I come from Detroit, so I know that there are a lot of things that go on. That's why I'm questioning it to begin with.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of people that are selling stuff, and they're making up their own rules. They're making up their own maintenance schedules. They're making up everything. And so they're saying, oh, no, you don't change your spark plugs at 100,000 miles. Do them at 25. They're crazy at 100. When do you change your spark plugs, Tom? If you got 100K, when do you change them?
Well, when the factory says to do it.
Yeah, and if you go to factory intervals, all of a sudden that's different. But I can't tell you, this kind of complaint that you have right now is one that people get a lot. The differential, they shouldn't have been able to see the difference. If they did a flush, transmission would be the same. The brake fluid's going to be iffy, the power steering fluid's going to be iffy, and the coolant's going to be iffy, because if your Chrysler has an abundance of rust in it, we can flush that until Tom and I are both 140 years old, and we're never going to get that red color out of here. However, we have equipment to test it.
Yes.
So if it's 40, 38 to 40 below zero, it's just fine. And okay. So that's the equipment we use. But it's really suspicious that the second shop hit you
with
that.
Well, that's why I didn't do it. I couldn't buy into it, and so I passed on it. But okay. It's been bugging me that it's even considered. But another question that I know you've talked about, and it's regarding the battery being left. And I've been putting a trickle charger on it when I leave town.
Okay.
And I've been listening to you, but more importantly, reading about it, that you take off the negative post. And is disconnecting the battery better than using the trickler?
They're both completely even. They're absolutely completely even. Tom, we were talking about the snowbirds, or the winter visitors. They're storing their cars during the summer. And so I said, let's put some wood underneath the tires, air up the tires to maximum inflation, clean oil, fill up the gas tank. And then we got to the battery. And the options were really put on a trickle charger, and you'll be fine. Okay. The problem on the trickle charger is we don't want it to have so many amps it's going to boil the battery and cause the gas to permeate the area of the battery, and when you get home, everything's corroded.
Right.
So you should be in the 1 to 3 amp area, and that's all. That's all.
Yeah, it's a maintainer.
Yeah, it's just
a maintainer.
Yeah, good one. That's exactly right. Another thing, too, is the reason why I said take the... Well, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation.
When you want to talk...
Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. My guest is Tom O'Kane from Action Auto, 27th Avenue in Deer Valley, just west a couple of doors of the I-17 on Deer Valley. We were talking to Ernie, and Ernie was talking about storing his car for the summer or a long period of time, however it is. We were talking about the difference between a trickle charger or a battery maintainer and just disconnecting the battery. And we said to Ernie, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Right.
What do you do on your boats, on your boat batteries? You trickle charge them or you just disconnect them?
I put a maintainer on it.
Okay. And is that like one from Harbor Freight for $9, something
well,
like that?
It's an onboard unit that I have.
Oh, okay.
Do the same thing for the motorcycles.
Okay. Is it about 1, 2 amps, 3 amps, something like that?
Yeah, an amp.
Okay. And when we talk about disconnecting the batteries, has your technician ever gone to disconnect the positive side first and had a problem? Where the wrench grounded or anything?
Well, we've heard that happen, but we don't do it that way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we always go to the negative side first.
And that's when I was kind of forceful about take the negative off first,
right.
and I had quite a few emailers say why? Why is that important?
Yeah,
it's not science. It's just
avoid sparks.
Yeah, and if you ground the wrench, if you hit the fender with the wrench when you're taking the negative off, nothing happens. But if you do the positive first, and the wrench that's connected to the positive terminal hits the fender, it is quite a fireworks show.
Yeah, it's a good spark.
and there's a whole lot of cussing going on when that happens, because usually you're going to have to paint the fender again. Usually you're going to have to replace the fusible links. Usually you've caused some damage. All righty, Gurney, thank you for calling. Paul, you're up next. Paul, how can we help you?
Your show. Hey, I got a 93 Dodge Dakota V8 automatic two-wheel drive. I've had since new. I failed my emissions for the first time, and I do try to take care of the truck. And I failed on the gases. The hydrocarbon gas was 2.13. The carbon monoxide was 20.57. And then the nitrogen NOx was 6.48.
His CO was 20%.
Your fuel economy's down.
Yeah, you're 20 times higher in the fuel that's coming out of the tailpipe. If you were to lock yourself in the garage, you'd be dead during a long commercial. That thing is really dirty.
It's pumping some gas through.
All right, now you know what he's got. He's got 2 point on the hydrocarbons. I would have thought it'd be a lot higher than that. And 20 points on what are you going to work on first?
Well, the first thing I'm going to look at is fuel control.
Okay, but on the two gases, are you going to focus on the HC first or the CO first?
Oh, carbon monoxides.
Okay.
COs.
Okay.
That's right. What we're going to look at.
You were saying the carbon monoxide is really high?
Yes.
You said two.
Well, their standard, the applicable standard was 20.00, and I'm 20.57.
Yeah, even if the reading that you came in is, 19, you're still rich.
Yeah.
Okay.
That car has the capability to be a $2 instead of $20.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And in reality, that car should be probably around 7 or 8.
Okay.
Carbon monoxide number.
And what we know is this: there's a faucet in your car, and somebody has the faucet too wide, and we're sending a lot of fuel through the tailpipe or into the tailpipe from the motor. We're not consuming all that fuel in the engine because we're literally flooding the engine full of fuel, and we're sending a whole bunch of CO out the tailpipe. The technician has to figure out where he's going to trim that fuel back. Now, it's not going to be a screw on your 93 Dakota because you have fuel injection. It's going to be some sensor. For instance, Tom, if it's a coolant sensor and it's showing 40 below zero, how does that work?
Well, that's telling the computer that it's cold outside.
60 below.
And let's turn the choke on and get this engine warmed up.
Right. And so if your coolant sensor was bad, it would think that it's 40 below, 60 below zero, and it would add a whole lot of fuel thinking that it's really, really cold. So you and once you trim the CO down, what happens to the CO or the HC?
Well, the hydrocarbons should come down with it.
And they're going to fall. What's your standard on the hydrocarbons? You said it was 2.13. Is the standard 2.0?
Yes.
Okay. So you're just barely over the CO. You know what? I'll bet if you wanted to get under 20, I bet he could change his oil and get it under 20.
Yeah, because certainly that's going past the rings.
Exactly. And I'm also thinking the PCV valve, if he's got contaminated oil in that, and he hasn't changed oil in a long time, we put fresh oil in it when it's and do a hot drain, and now all of a sudden we've eliminated all that fuel that's in the oil from the PCV valve, and then he drops below 2,
right.
Or 2.0, or 20.0. But if I were you, you could do that. I would say that if you drove it around, got the motor really hot, changed the oil and filter, and then while you were in line, keep the throttle up to about 1,500 RPM, keep that cat good and warm, and then when it's your turn to test, you'll probably pass. I don't think that's what's in your best interest. I think you
I want to fix it.
Yeah, I think you need to have somebody trim it back as far as they can.
Okay.
And Tom says 5, 6, 7%, and I'm saying maybe 2, 3, 4, 5%. So we've got between 2 and 7% that we think you can drop that down. Consider this. We're asking you to drop two-thirds of the fuel that's coming out of your tailpipe that you're not benefiting from.
Yeah, my mileage isn't that good. So.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the reason why.
Okay.
All righty?
Okay, yes, but you gave me one sensor. I need a shop in my area, Glendale.
I've got Kurt's. Well, I got Kurtz at Bell and I-17. I got Tom here at Deer Valley and 17. I've got Mike's Auto Tech at 67th Avenue and South and Northern. If you go to MarkSalem.com, you can look at all of them. And what you'll do is it'll say, do you want mechanical? Do you want body work? Do you want tires? Do you want diesel? And so you're going to click mechanical, and then it's going to say, what city are you in? And you're going to say Glendale, and it's going to pop up all the mechanical shops in Glendale.
Okay.
And this is what they're going to do. Now, Tom, he's at your front counter. What are you going to tell him? What's the diagnostic fee?
It's going to depend on how much time we're going to have to spend on it, but typically I would expect $80 to $100 to
perfect because
to figure that out.
I tell them 75 to 125. You don't know.
Yeah,
you
don't know.
But we're going to plug a scanner in, and we're going to start talking to all the sensors, and we're going to fake them out. Remember that coolant sensor? Maybe we put a cardboard over the radiator and get the motor up hot.
2 minutes.
And see if we can get that coolant sensor to see the hot. Or we might take a hose and wash the radiator to drop the engine temperature, and we want to see that happen on our handheld scanner. So that's what you're going to pay for. And at the end of that, he'll say to you, this is what's going to fix your car. You're going to say, is it a guess or a fix? They're going to say it's a fix. And you say, go ahead and do it. So I have a diagnostic fee. I might have an O2 sensor and the labor to replace the O2 sensor, and that's the total bill plus tax.
Okay, what does the sensor run in labor, just to give me an idea, roughly?
Well, it depends. The mass airflow sensor is probably $30 in labor. It depends on where the O2 is. It could be $150 in labor. A map sensor buried underneath the dash can be another $80,
$90
in labor.
Or, you know, we see up, you know, because we're in North Phoenix, we see a lot of rats. You know, rodents like to get in there and chew the wire. So it just may be a simple wire fix.
I don't have any rodents.
Well, you're
in the garage and we don't have any rodents.
1 minute.
All righty. Okay. Well, listen, but Tom's right. If there's a bad connection.
One question in regard to this, because when I finished up, they say go talk to the tech or whoever is in the shop there,
right.
Or the testing shop facility. He says, I can't tell you this, but he says, with all your gases up, he says, your catalytic converter's probably bad. You think he missed that totally?
Well, the catalytic converter can't even go to work.
It's being flooded with gas.
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
so
he
was totally off. Okay, so Mark Salem and pick out a mechanic.
There you go.
You just go to marksalem.com. And, Tom, you're exactly right. That's not fair of him to say that.
No.
Because we're flooding. It would be like this. You're going to build steaks. We're going to grill steaks tonight. And you throw the briquettes out. And I sprinkle a little gas on it, and then you throw a match, and we got it burning. And then I dump a gallon, and then another minute I dump a gallon, and then I keep dumping a gallon. Pretty soon I'm going to drown the fire.
Right.
And so he says, obviously he's not an ASC master, because he wouldn't have said that. He would have said, get the CO down, and that'll bring the HCs down, and your catalytic converter will be much more efficient, and by the time you put 100 highway miles on that, that catalytic converter will be hot and burn itself clean.
Right.
When we come back, we're going to continue to take calls, 602-508-0960, 27th Avenue and Deer Valley Road. And we're here to help you with your car questions and car problems, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. And, Tom, if he would have taken, and we're talking about Paul, if Paul would have taken the advice of the vehicle emissions expert, what would have happened?
You mean to replace the catalytic converter?
Yeah, just go replace the catalytic converter.
Well, a catalytic converter is a Band-Aid on a wound. You know, you cut your arm, you put a Band-Aid on it. You didn't fix your arm. You just covered it up. So by sticking a catalytic converter on that exhaust system, it would have eaten up some of the gases and the hydrocarbons, and he probably would pass the test. The problem is he's still getting bad fuel economy. And then in 3 weeks or time or so, the catalytic converter would go bad, and he'd be right back to where he is today.
Right.
Although he would have 2 years of license registration on his vehicle.
Right. But that's
not fixing the car.
Yeah, but a catalytic converter can run as little as 300 upwards to 2,000.
Depends on the structure of the vehicle.
What's the most expensive cat you've ever hung on a car, do you know?
Well, it would have been a Jaguar, I'm sure.
And, okay.
Or BMWs. They get up there.
There's a whole lot of Fords, though, that have those twin cats in the Y-pipe.
The Taurus, absolutely.
Oh, man. It's a little hard to tell them that the two catalytic converters that I need to install are only available from Ford, and they're $1,500.
Right.
Holy mackerel.
Right. How do you justify that?
Well, you got to have a license plate, and you got to have a sticker. There's no other choice besides that. That's the tough part. It is
hard.
A tough part. The problems with emissions, and I'm sure you've seen it before, and I see it all the time, is that we don't fix the root of the problem. We Band-Aid it. We do something to it to make it better temporarily, but we're really not fixing what's wrong with it. Now, with him running 20% out of his tailpipe, which is what he was running, and the limit was 20% of the upper limit, he still contaminated his oil with gasoline.
Correct.
He's wearing his bush bearings inside of his engine. His PCV valve system is having a tough time keeping up. His fuel economy is in the toilet. His catalytic converter is all sooted up. His exhaust is sooted up. The muffler, the resonator, all of that stuff is sooted up.
Right.
And it's kind of
like... Caller Arthur.
It's kind of like this. You have a water wheel on a river, okay? Let's say that the water goes over the edge at 10 feet wide. Well, if you have a 10-foot wide wheel, then you're using that efficiently.
Right.
But if the wheel was 20 miles wide, it wouldn't be an efficient situation. Right. And if the wheel was 2 feet wide, it wouldn't be. So what Paul has is he has a river that's 10 feet wide running over his paddle wheel that's only 2 feet wide. He's right. just running a lot of fuel through that system that doesn't need to be there.
Or on the other side of it, he's just paying $6 a gallon for gas instead of the $3.50.
That's a good point. I didn't even think. Arthur, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hi. Yes, a couple things. I have a 2004 Honda Element.
Okay.
And I'm going to replace the front strut. And I was wondering, and you have to use compression strings, obviously, but where the strut runs through the upper mount, that part of the piston is going up and down.
Yeah.
So if I remove the whole strut, that strut's not going to, with the spring, is not going to come apart on me, is it?
No.
It's okay. Being held together by the upper mount. And,
okay, that's what my concern was.
And you'll take the strut out in its entirety.
2 minutes.
Correct.
And then you're going to compress the spring, and then you'll take the upper mount off.
Correct.
Slide the strut out, slide the new strut in. But let me tell you something. If you're going to do that on a 2004, how many miles are on it?
Almost 100,000.
Okay.
Pretty close.
I'd probably go ahead and buy those two upper mounts. You can get struts and those upper mounts in the aftermarket for your Honda. I'd buy the upper mounts just in case you need them. If they look
bad,
that's
what's broke on it. Yeah, that's why I'm doing that for sure.
All right, you don't have to do the shock for the upper mount. You can just do the upper mount.
Right. I just saw some oil leaking out of it, so I'm thinking I'm going to do the strut too.
All right.
That's
okay.
The reason. That
and then my other question on the same vehicle is my dog chewed through the seatbelt.
Okay.
So I got through the seatbelt. I replaced it. And I didn't disconnect the battery first, so I guess my S light is on, is that what they call it?
Yep.
And so, anyway, so I put it all together, everything's working, but now I have that light on.
1 minute.
Okay, Tom.
Is that because I didn't unplug the battery, or?
Well, more than likely, yes. But it's more than likely it's a simple reset of that system.
Reboot, kind of.
Yeah.
So how do I reboot that system?
Okay, you have to honk the horn 3 times. You have to wave a dead chicken around your head 9 times clockwise and 3 times counterclockwise.
Okay.
You open and close the driver's door, and you got to slam it pretty hard. Then disconnect the negative cable for about 3 minutes and put it back on.
And sometimes that works, but sometimes it doesn't.
Okay.
So, disconnect the negative battery cable, discharge all the voltage in the system, and then repower it up.
If you want to do a cleanest boot in the world, you take the negative off first, you take the positive off second. The two cables you touch together, which discharges all the capacitors, then you hook up the positive first, the negative last, and at that point, the computer will go out and take inventory of all the sensors, and it'll say, okay, I see that seatbelt back, and you should not have an SRS light. 602-508-0960. We'll be back after this.
960 News. New.
Well, thank you very much for spending your day with me. We've got another hour, so you don't need to go anywhere if you don't want to. But I've got to take care of some business, but I'll give you the phone number again, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you have a car question, Tom and I are ready for it, and we're going to be out of here in about 10 minutes and then the next hour. So you have time now or time later. This portion of Under the Hood has been brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Thompson's Auto Repair has been family-owned and has been in Mesa since 1970. They're equipped to handle major, minor, foreign cars, domestic cars, motorhomes, trucks. They understand that your vehicle, regardless if it's a Honda or it's a work truck, is a major investment, and they're going to care for your vehicle as if it was their own. Brian and Thelma, married couple, the salt of the earth, good, good people. They own Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. They're just east of Stapley, on Main Street in Mesa, and a really, really nice couple. And that seems to be a common denominator, Tom. We've got lots of men and women in the shops that for whatever reason, get along real well. How's your wife?
She pretty much stays out of the shop. My wife works for a hospital, and she works nights.
Okay, all right. And I wish my wife would stay out of the shop. there's times after 30 years that I have to pull rank on her. No, we're not doing it that way. It's Venus and Mars, okay? It's Venus and Mars. And because she says you only wear the hat that hat? Because I let you. That's what she always says. I said, oh, that's great. All righty. When we talk,
we've got David, then Fred.
Okay, David, you're up first, buddy. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Good.
Yes. I had a question from last week. I believe you had a caller that had a harness or something. He wanted to check it out at the transmission shop. I think it was an AMCO shop or something. And then he took it to Adolph's, I believe. How do like places like that even like stay in business if they just give faulty, you know, information or give bad advice to what you really need for your car?
We both have an answer, and I will allow my guest to go first.
Well, excuse me. Sometimes people make assumptions, you know, without actually getting inside and seeing firsthand what's going on. They'll kind of speculate. So, yeah, I don't understand what had happened to the harness. Was it an internal transmission harness or an external?
He took his car to a transmission shop, and they bid him $3,000-$4,000 for transmission. He got a little uncomfortable. He went over to Adolph's. Adolph's found an external harness problem, fixed it for $120, if my memory serves me right, and the guy was obviously a little concerned.
Oh, absolutely. He should be at that point. I didn't realize it was an external harness.
Yeah.
They didn't do their job.
And you know, but the reason why they're still in business is if, let's say you and I were partners, and let's say you and I weren't married and we didn't have any kids. Let's say you and I really wanted to go to Wyoming and fish. How long could we keep a repair shop up, and how long could we take advantage of people before we had to move out of town?
I don't think it would be that long.
I think it would be years.
You think?
Because there's guys in this valley now that have been years.
They would drive me nuts.
Well, no, you're right. You're right. But the point is that there's lots of shops that I'm aware of, but what happens is people complain, but they don't complain to the right people. You can go in and look at some of the shops, and they have A's and B ratings at the Better Business Bureau, and the request why is, Mark, we only got two complaints on them. On the other hand, this other shop that I talked about a couple weeks ago, he has an F rating.
Oh, boy.
And he has gobs of complaint. So what I tell people is if you had a tough time, you need to write a report to the Better Business Bureau. You owe it to the rest of us. Because if we call that shop and no one has complained to the Better Business Bureau and there's no record, or you can go SalemBoysAuto.com, or no, Salem Boys Auto Reviews, or Action Auto Reviews, and you can read reviews about that shop.
Right.
And if you do that, then you're more aware. The internet has made it very interesting. The one shop had taken search words from a major transmission manufacturer and had captured those and was sending all those Google links to him. And, of course, he obviously made everybody mad because he stepped in front of everybody and bought those search words. But to answer your question, David, they do that, and they do that all the time. And sometimes, here's what happens. He'll put a tranny in it for $3,700, and it'll still have the problem. Then he might either work on it really hard and fix it, the wiring problem, for $120, or he may take it somewhere else to somebody who's better. They'll fix it for $120, and then he'll just bill you the $3,700 and never say a word about the $120 repair.
Right.
And that happens. And he's going to bury it in there to save his original investment. So, yep, that happens. There's no way around that. Okay, Dave, any other thing? Do we have any other questions from Dave?
He dropped off.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much. Fred, you're up next, buddy. How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
Good. Very good. Thank you.
I have a 96 Fleetwood Southwind model motorhome.
Okay.
4-speed engine. I overheated it on a long pull in Colorado, and the number 5 cylinder is gone.
Okay.
Can that cylinder be worked on in the vehicle?
The answer is yes. It's hard no matter what, but I don't think it's been diagnosed yet. Right.
It's a low compression in number 5.
Is it low compression in number 5, or do we have a combustion leak in number 5, or what?
There is no compression, and it's got oil blow-by.
Okay, you had to have melted the piston, and now you got a cylinder wall. So, no, the if you're sure about that. Do you have a camera that you drop down spark plug holes?
Yes.
And so do we. So somebody needs to drop a camera down that spark plug hole. We need to drop the cylinder down to the bottom, and then we need to drop the camera inside there and look.
And see what you're dealing with.
And if the cylinder walls are all scored up and the piston's all, and there's oil on top of the piston and the spark plug's fouled with oil, then there is no repair you're going to do while that motor's in there. I can tell you that in and out on motorhomes is typically $3,000 to $4,000. That's engine in, engine out. I'm not quite sure on a 96 that you should take the chance of fixing what you got. I would certainly buy a good rebuilt engine from a name brand company with perhaps a year to 3 year warranty on it. I think that's the best deal.
Right. If you go into it with the assumption that you're going to fix number five, number four is probably right behind it.
And if that happens, you're in big trouble.
And what would be the cost to in and out a rebuild?
Well, I don't know that anybody rebuilds anymore. I can tell you that I don't, because I can't give you the warranty that the major engine guys can. And
what if I could buy a brand new short block?
Well, how many miles are on it?
It's about 30,000.
Well, the head might go to a short block. You got to find somebody that's going to let you bring your own part, because here's the problem. When you come to my shop, I'm not going to do that, and I'm going to say, I'm sorry, Fred, but here's the situation. The fact is that 5,000 miles down the road, that motor fails. There's going to be a battle between, did the motor fail because of the way it was fixed or the way it was installed? You got two different people that are in that food chain. Me, I didn't make a dime on the motor. And then you got the manufacturer. And he's going to say, the installer caused the engine to fail. I'm going to say, you're... engine caused your own engine to fail, and you, Fred, are in the middle of a big battle. So for the $300, $400, $500, $600 we're going to mark up that motor, a short block, you should let us have all of the responsibility. It's in your best interest. You need to bid your engine four different ways. Labor in and out. I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be $3,000 to $4,000. It depends on what's in front of the engine and what comes out. I can't picture a 96 Southwind. Number two, the engine. And if you have a small block, you can add another 10, 12 hours to that, because you got to transfer all the parts from the old one. You got to take the parts off, wash them, clean them, scrape the gaskets off, and put them on the short block. Then we're going to go back in. So you got labor in and out, you got the engine, you got another 10 hours on a short block, another $1,000, I should say. And then you've got all the miscellaneous, and you're going to want to hang every hose, every mount, everything you can, because you only pay for the parts the labor's already been paid for. Right?
Correct.
So then you got tax. So let's figure this out. $3,000 for a short block, $1,000 more for short block labor, and you got, let's say, $3,500 in and out. So we got $365, $75. I'm going to give you $1,000 worth of tax and miscellaneous. So you got $7,500, $8,500, and I'm guessing. I'm just guessing. So
wow, the whole home is not even worth that.
Yeah. Now, the only other thing you could do is call a wrecking yard and say, my 96 F53 chassis, my Ford one-ton chassis, it has a 460 fuel-injected motor in it. What does it share with? And if they say, you know what, that same motor appears in a 2003 F350, and then you say, can you find me a F350 pretty cheap? And he goes, yeah, I got a 460 sitting right here out of a truck, and it's got 27,000 miles on it, and I'll sell it to you for $2,000. How about something like that?
Okay, so the Ford F-250 460 engine?
Well, you're going to look for a 96 Ford engine, a 96 Ford in an F-53 chassis. I'm guessing that you have an F-53 chassis. So
okay.
The chassis is different than the Southwind box that's sitting on it. So you would just get with people to find out that motor is the same motor in how many years? What's the year spread? I don't know the answer to it, but I'm going to guess it's going to be at least 94, 95, all the way up to probably 2000 or even higher.
Yeah, you would like to think that.
So if that's the case, then you could probably buy a low mileage used engine and stuff it. And then you'd lose that $1,000 worth of transferring, because the used engine is going to come complete. So, but you need to budget $7,000 to $10,000, no matter what card you pull out of the stack. That's what it's going to cost you to do it right. And believe me, if you cut corners, you're going to find out when you're 500 miles from home, and you're going to be sorry. So don't do that. All righty, when we come back, we're going to continue to talk about cars. Lines are open, 602-508-0960. And I want to remind you that Kurt's Auto Repair is up north. He's a good guy. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurt's Auto. He has tremendous expertise. Their auto technicians are very, very good and have been working with Kurt for a very long time. Again, domestic, import, gas, diesel, motorhomes, whatever. Kurt's goal is to offer the best services at the affordable prices and get you back on the road quickly. Now, Kurt's is located at I-17 and Bell, just east of I-17. So, I-17 and Bell. Give Kurt's Auto a try if you don't already have a garage. And when you do, you'll understand why I feel really good about recommending them. Another one I want to talk about up in that same area, how far north from Bell are you?
Oh, about 5 miles.
Okay. So Deer Valley, the west side of the freeway, three or four doors as you put it down, is Action Auto. And Tom is a good guy. He's a heck of a fisherman. So if you have a truck and you fish a lot, and if you have a boat, Tom does wheel bearings on boats. Do you do
on the trailers? We do
on the trailer. Okay. Do you do the lower? Do you change the fluid in the lower ends?
Absolutely.
Of the outboards.
And my personal equipment, I do. Yes.
Would you do it for anybody else?
If they said do it, I would probably get it done.
Right. And but you're really good at fixing their poles and their rods, right?
2 minutes.
Sometimes I sit down on them and break them.
Oh, that's probably not very good.
No, that's not good. But it has happened.
What do you like to work on?
My retirement account.
Okay, all right.
You know, it's whatever comes through the door.
Okay. Take, for instance, Fred's motorhome, 96 Southwood.
We just don't have the facility
for
a large vehicle.
And you know, you're right, because we use a forklift to get that motor out. We just strip the front. The front comes off,
right,
and that motor comes out the front on a forklift. And you have to have something like that. Plus, you got to have a little shade, because this is a bad time of year to be doing it. But air conditioning, brakes, maintenance.
We do it all.
And you're sticking with manufacturers. What's the word I'm looking for? The recommended intervals.
Correct.
And you don't make up your own.
Yeah, it's key to follow what the factory. You know, these manufacturers spend millions of dollars developing these systems. They test it. They know what's going on. Follow the factory book.
If it's not in the factory book, then you have to ask them why. So they want to foam your upper intake and clean the back of your valves, and then they want to put something in your gas tank to make your gas more explosive, and then they're going to add something that's going to super cool your cooling system. You have to ask that about them.
Is it a profit?
Oh, of course it is.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. So you have to make sure whose interest is being served. Tom, thanks for spending your Saturday with me, buddy. And folks, I can't tell you enough, Tom is even though he's married, he's one of those guys that you'd hope your daughter would bring home. That's the kind of guy he is. Honest, dependable, real likable, and he's just that kind of guy that I could leave my keys to my car, and I'd know that if he wrecked it, he'd pay for it. The rest of you, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got nobody on the lines, and if you'd like to call us, you can right now. And then when we come back, we're going to come back at about 3 minutes after, and probably 4 minutes after, I'm going to take my first call.
This is only.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside. Choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart. Although I was a bit concerned.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back for the second hour of Under the Hood. My name's Mark Salem. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We've got open lines available, and I'll give you the number real quick. It's 602-508-0960. 508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with the transmission, Bob and Steve are the best quality transmission diagnosticians that I know of. They have years of experience doing repairs on trucks and cars, 4x4s, motorhomes, vibrations, noises. Transmission guys, especially the guys at Quality Transmission, are really, really good at vibrations. They're in Tempe on McClintock, just north of University, between University and the 202 on right there by the new Tempe Center. And no matter where you live, really and truly, they're worth the drive. Let's go to the phones. We've got a couple gentlemen that have waited through the break. Larry, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hello, Mark. It's a great show. Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
Based on a lot of your calls, this is probably going to be pretty simple, but I'm calling in regards to an 07 Camry four-cylinder engine.
Okay.
Got 180,000 miles on it. I'm a little disappointed in it because I thought Camrys were invincible, but it is evidently burning oil.
Okay.
And I can't find any leaks or anything in it, and I just wondered if you might have any ideas of what could be done with it other than tear it apart. Probably too late in the game now to tear that engine down.
No, you're right that may not make real physical sense to do that. Let me ask you a couple questions. Has it ever fouled a spark plug yet?
No, not that I know of.
Okay, all right.
And I put plugs in it not too long ago, and I didn't notice that. But to actually answer that question, I'd have to pull them and look at them.
Okay, four-cylinder, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. If you go to marksalem.com and click on FAQs, I have an FAQ, I think it's 50-something, that talks about oil consumption. And here's what you can do yourself. The first thing you have to do is take a piece of paper and draw your dipstick on it and show your full mark and your ad mark. Bring it right to the full mark and put the date and the mileage right next to it. And this is called an oil consumption test. 180,000-mile motor may very well use a quart every 1,500 miles. While that doesn't sound very good, that's certainly acceptable. And when you begin to use more than that, a quart every 700 miles or 600 miles or 500 miles, almost always you end up with a fouled spark plug and a bad miss at idle that doesn't go away when you accelerate. You pull the plugs, you look at them, one of them's oil fouled, you put a new one in, the plug's fine, the motor's fine, the idle's fine, and everything's fixed. So you're not even into stage two with respect to oil consumption. Now, there's a whole lot of things. It's not uncommon for an engine to suck oil out of the engine through the PCV valve system. So we have to make sure that's okay, which is really insignificant. It's $30, $40, $50 to check it out. And even if they had to fix it, they would probably fit it in there.
You say that was a PCV system?
Yep. It's positive crankcase ventilation. We're going to suck the fumes out of the motor and run them back through the intake and burn them again.
Okay.
And so another thing that you could have is it doesn't like the last quart of oil. So what happens if you bring it right to the full mark, and then you monitor it, and you write down on this date at this time, at this mileage, it's here, here, here. And when it gets to the ad mark, all of a sudden it stabilizes. And it doesn't go any deeper than the ad mark for 2,000-3,000 miles. Well, what's happening is it just doesn't like that last quart. And sometimes older engines will do that. But the ad mark says add a quart. It doesn't say it's low. It just says it's a low. It's a quart off full. When it drops below the ad mark, I want you to add oil. And then another thing, what kind of oil are you putting in it?
It's a 520 weight, I think, is what they require.
Now, if I were you, I'd use a 1030 or a 30 weight.
Okay, but no 40?
No, not yet. We're not there yet. If you had a fouled spark plug, I'd have gone to 40, but you don't have a fouled spark plug yet.
Okay.
And then, if I'm working on the car, I'm going to pull the spark plugs, and I can tell you, I'm going to find which cylinder's using the oil, if it's using the oil. And then once I find that cylinder, then I'm going to take a wet, dry compression test. So I'm going to take a compression test with it, crank it over, four times. And then I'm going to squirt some oil in the cylinder, and then I'm going to do it again. And all of a sudden, the compression rises 20, 30, 40 pounds. And I say, okay, the rings are out of this, or the rings are stuck. So I'm going to fill the cylinder full of diesel fuel. I'm going to let it sit for a day or so, thinking I can unstick it. I'll crank it over every once in a while. And see if I can unstick the rings. But maybe they're broken, so I'm wasting my time. So I'm going to put a hotter spark plug in that cylinder. And I'm going to look at the chart and see the heat range of the factory plugs. And then it says, if you want to go from a 7Y and you want to get hotter, then go to a 9Y. Oh, okay, good. I'll get a 9Y.
Okay.
So I'll put a hotter spark plug in there. But if you shouldn't be using a 5-weight in a Camry that's an 07 with 180,000 miles on it. I really think you are better served by, I'd go to a 1030, And if you're one quart low after 300 or after 3,000 miles, you don't have a problem, because a lot of cars are a quart low at 3,000 miles.
Oh.
So, and if you went to a straight 30 weight, I'll bet you could just lick this. And if you went to a straight 30 weight, you'll still be fine in the wintertime, because it's not like we get 60 below zero. It's not like we get much more than 3 or 4 degrees below freezing.
Right.
So just that's what I do. It could
great.
Be,
well,
it could
that
be,
sounds great. I tell you what, if I'll go through these processes, and if I still have issues, I'll just bring it in.
Okay. One other thing is there's valve guide seals. I want you to pay attention when you first start it in the morning. If you get a puff of blue or white smoke that goes away and it only happens first thing in the morning, that's usually valve guide seals. We can replace the valve guide seals without disassembling the motor or without taking it out of the car. We just pull the valve covers, pull the cams, and then we air up the cylinder, and we have special tools to go in and replace the valve guide seals. If the valve guide seals are just bad, then we're going to fix your oil consumption problem. If the valve guides are worn real bad, then we're going to slow it down, but we're not going to fix it.
Right.
So, all righty.
Well, I sure appreciate all your help, and I will go right down your list.
Okay, thank you very much. All right,
thank you.
Thank you for waiting for me, Larry. I appreciate that. All righty, 602-508-0960. Doug, you're up next. How can I help you, Doug?
Yeah, Mark, thanks for taking my call. I enjoy listening to your show for
thank
many
you.
Years.
Thank you.
I have an 02 Tacoma pre-runner with 73,000 D6.
Okay.
I have a brake problem. The brakes, the rotors are the original rotors. They've been cut. I'm sure everything is tight.
Okay.
Around town at slow speed, things are pretty smooth. But when I'm coming off a ramp at a higher speed, I get a lot of shaking
okay.
in the front end.
Okay. I know what's wrong with your car. That's classic. You've described it so perfectly. The front rotors are wobbling too much. The question is why? Now, we would use a dial indicator that measures a thousandth of an inch, and we'd raise the car off the ground, and we would spin the tire, the wheel, and the rotor, and we would put our dial indicator up against the rotor, and it would tell us if it's got a 3,000th wobble, a 10,000th wobble, but starting from the inside out, it could be bad wheel bearings. It could be that the last guy that cut the rotor didn't cut it right. It could be that you've overheated the front brakes and warped the front rotor. It could be the hardware kit that's causing it. And you can also have a bad tie rod end or something wrong in the steering system that's allowing a little bit of slop to be aggravated by the left and right movement when you're getting off the ramp. So this could be steering. This could be tires. But it's more likely, because it's brake activated, that the rotors aren't running true. And so that's 80% of the time the rotors aren't running true. Now let me bring something up to you. We don't want the rotors to be perfectly true. Here's why. You know how a caliper works, where we're going to squeeze both sides of the rotors with two brake pads?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We need to have a little bit of wobble when we let go of the pedal, so that the rotor will push this pad back a tad and push the other pad back a tad. So we need a little bit of wobble there. Now, that we have machines now that cut the rotors on the car, and sometimes they don't give us any wobble. And now we got an overheated brake system because there's no wobble. So we still want 1, maybe 2 thousandths of wobble, but we don't want 5, 10, 15, or 20. And that's pretty easy. I think you can probably have this fixed for less than $80.
Okay.
And
like
have somebody cut the rotors.
Have the rotors cut.
Well, and you're not going to tell them that. You're going to say, come take a drive with me. I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. It's a fast highway stop down an exit ramp. It's going to shake like crazy. I want you to diagnose it. Now, he's going to pull the front wheels off, check the rotor run out real quick. He's going to call you back and say, all I need to do is turn the rotors. Or he's going to call you back and say, the runout's 30 thousandths, and you've got a bad wheel bearing in the left front. I'm going to replace the two wheel bearings and pack the right side. And the rotors, I'm going to check them when I'm done. I may still need to cut them, but I don't think so. And now your bill's $125.
Well, I don't get any shake in the steering wheel, though.
I know, but the whole truck is shuddering.
The whole truck is shuddering.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, and if you were to stop, if you come off that ramp and nobody's around, just reach over and grab your release on your parking brake and try to stop it with your parking brake, and you won't feel that shudder, because now we're just going to use the back brakes.
Right. Okay.
So it's front brake activated. It only happens when you hit the front brake and when you're going fast. So I'm real sure that you've got something wrong with the rotors, and it could be nothing more than just cutting them.
Okay.
All righty.
I'll give that a try.
Okay, buddy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You bet. 602-508-0960. We got anybody else?
We do. Next up is Archie.
Archie, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, thank you. I've got a quick question on F53 chassis. I just picked up a 460 Ford recently, and I was in the underbay, and I saw looked like some Dexron transmission fluid. That wouldn't be what I would use in there, is it?
Yeah.
It is?
Let me tell you. That is, it is, the transmission fluid issue has just gone crazy. All right, we got Dextron 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We got Dextron / Mercon. Mercon was the high-performance synthetic oil from Ford. Dextron is the high-performance synthetic fluid on the top side for GM. But now we got Dextron / Mercon.
That's where I got confused.
All right, and so what you're going to do is you're just going to get the superseded product when you buy for it. So look in your owner's manual. I'm pretty sure it's going to call for either Dex3 or Dextron Mercon, and then when you get Dextron 5, that should replace anything before it, and so you'll use Dextron 5 on your Ford, believe it or not.
Okay, and then what would you recommend for viscosity at this time of year for the engine oil?
I use a 2050 on that if it's in a motorhome chassis.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay, 2050 would be my game. And if you have any other questions, stay there because I'm going to take a break right now. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're talking cars every Saturday between 10 and noon for 2 hours, and my focus is what is in your best interest. Nobody will ever be able to accuse me of buttering my bread on your back. I promise you that. I just know the difference between right and wrong. I owe that to my mom and dad, and I'm pretty doggone good with cars. I'm pretty doggone good at guessing based on how much information you give me. I'm only as good as the information you give me. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Larry Harker's has been in the Valley since 1967. The current owners, Bob and Ellen, have owned and operated the Larry Harker's since 1989. Their technicians have been with them for years and years and years. Larry Harker's Auto Repair is a trusted source for quality repairs and affordable prices in the Phoenix area. They're located at 38th Avenue and Indian School. So if you go north a mile to Camelback and you say Camelback down to the I-10 from north and south boundaries, and then the eastern boundary of the I-17 and the western boundary of the 101, if you live in that area and you don't already have what you think is a great shop, then please try Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Archie, are you still there, buddy?
Sam, a quickie. I'm in Northwest Phoenix, and I was curious if I could use somebody out here for brake work on that F53 chassis and then the drive lines like U-joints. Who would you recommend?
Yeah, that's no problem. D&B Auto, Dan and Betsy Auto, Adolph's Transmission or Sun Transmission out there. Either one of them can handle anything in the drive line. You got Mike's Auto Tech out there. Now, D&B and Mike's Auto Tech, they can handle your brake work. And,
oh, good. Okay.
And then if you need anybody else, just go to MarkSalem.com. You're going to click on Mechanical, and then you can click on Glendale, Sun City, Peoria, and all those cities up there in the Northwest.
Perfect. Thanks for all your help.
All right. Thank you, Archie. Thank you very much. One of the things that I'm really especially proud of is for instance, last week, we had Jim call us, and Jim had an 01 Neon, and he had taken it to a shop, and they had just hit him between the eyes with a big old estimate, and I don't remember what it was, but it was in the thousands. So on a whim, he decided to take it over to Adolph's Transmission, 67th Avenue in Glendale. He said Adolph didn't have it very long. He says he thinks the bill was less than $120, and he fixed the car. And I think he was more glad that he went to Adolph's, because he's thinking to himself, I could have easily spent thousands of dollars and not had the problem fixed. And then, of course, the battle, you know, the battle is on at that point. So I'm especially proud of my shops because this is what they do the best. And they're all honest, they're all dependable. And all these guys have 5 years in business. They all have good Better Business Bureau records. They all have good credit reports. And they all truly believe that if they're wrong, they'll tell you. I can tell you right now, I'm putting an engine in a truck that we damaged. Yep, that's what we are. We don't know what happened to this motor, but we do know this. It happened on our watch. And we lost oil pressure, and we can't figure it out, so we're just going to put another engine in it. And our customer, God bless him, he's been a great guy to us. But he's not going to pay for anything. I think he made, to upgrade him from a used motor to a short block, I think he's going to pay $300 because he got a third of the life of the engine. So I think he's going to pay $300, which tells me the short block's like $900, my cost. Because I'm not going to take advantage of him. I just want to get him on the road again. But that's what they all do, too. That happens at their shops on a lot. Roger, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
I just a maintenance question. Okay. A 2007 Acura, the TSX model. And it's been a while since I looked at the manual, but the manual probably says radiator flush and tune-up at probably 90 or 100,000 miles.
Okay.
All right, now, so the car's now, what, 6-7 years old, uh-huh. And I've only got about 60-some on it, and, you know, I was thinking about the summer here and that sort of thing.
Okay.
What about radiator flush and or tune-up?
Okay. First of all, I think you want to do the tune-up in the cold weather time because okay. It's easier to get the spark plugs out after they've been around the world three times. And they've had how many thousands of heat cycles where they get hot and cold, hot and cold, hot and cold. So they seem to come out of the threaded heads a lot easier in the wintertime than they do in the summertime. Number two, on your cooling system, are you familiar with how to use a digital volt ohmmeter?
No.
Okay. Here's the problem we got. And this is a problem that started in the 90s, early 90s. We've got all this aluminum and dissimilar metals in the cooling system. Because of the dissimilar metals, we're turning the coolant into battery acid. And it's eating up the aluminum intakes, it's eating up the gaskets, it's eating up the freeze plugs, and it's eating up radiators, and it's eating up water pumps. Now, here's how we test it. We literally take the two leads of the digital voltometer, and we put it on a very small voltage. Ground the negative lead at the battery, and on the positive one, we stick it in the coolant. If it's 150 millivolts or higher, you effectively have a small amount of battery acid in your cooling system. Okay. I suggest to you that the flush is going to be about $100.
Okay.
Let me open that up. I'm going to say 85 to 125.
Okay.
So I can cover everybody. It's going to cost you twice or three times that much money to pull the intake off your TSX. So if I were you, because of the aluminum and because of the if it's got the long-term coolant, I like to tell people I'd like to see you take that out at 70 or 80. So take it out and flush it and put it back in, and then you're better protected. On the spark plug end, it depends. If you've got a double platinum plug in there, it'll go 100,000. But okay. I don't want to jackhammer those spark plugs out because if I call you, it's going to sound like this, Roger, I did my best. I heated up the motor. I soaked those spark plugs. I let it cool off overnight, and one of them brought the threads with it. Roger, there's nothing I could do about it. Otherwise, I had to leave it in. So I got to pull the head, and I got to have that one spark plug hole re-threaded, and the bill's going to be about $1,600.
Okay.
And so I don't want to do that. And so even if we take them out, look at them, and put them back in, it's kind of like taking your dog for a walk. They're easy to pull out next time, and we don't want to jackhammer your spark plugs out. We think it's absolutely ridiculous that the marketing department got to tell everybody that you have 100,000 mile spark plugs, where the service and the engineer guys are going, oh, my God. And they're going to say, look at the harm we're causing our customers. But the marketing department says we have 100,000 mile spark plugs. So no matter what, we have 100,000 mile spark plugs. So let me turn the question around. Mark, when do you flush your cooling systems? At 75. Mark, when do you change your spark plugs? Well, I have mostly diesels, but on my wife's car, I do them at 75 to 85.
Okay.
And that's what I do. And I put a good premium, either single platinum, double platinum, or a new Denso, a Ridion spark plug. That'll give me good service throughout the entire time. There's no wear of the metal, and the gap stays the same the whole time.
Gotcha.
All righty.
Once again, a wintertime job for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, but one last thing on the radiator
flush.
Hoses, belts, or is that just an eye exam kind of thing?
It's kind of a squeeze. They need to be soft and pliable, and if they're crunchy, you're in trouble. And if I were you, I'd wait. If you have to do the radiator, I'd do the upper and lower hoses at the radiator. I'd do the heater hoses, you know, sometime during the winter. I want you to flush it before you start this summer Everything else can wait. 60,000 miles, your hoses really don't age without the constant temperature fluctuation.
Okay.
So we hot cycle, cold cycle, hot cycle. That's where we wear it out. But really and truly, any seasoned technician with a little bit of gray hair around his ears or under his shirt or coming underneath his hat, he can squeeze them and feel them. He says, these are fine. Or, these are too hard. Let me get a new one and I'll show you the difference. So that's okay. How it works. Thank you very much, Roger. I appreciate your call. Bob, you're up next. And we've got 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And Bob, I promise you'll be next. We'll be right back.
This is Bob.
An automobile, the metal monster with the polyglass wheels, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, 11:34 on a Saturday morning. We're here till noon. We've got a couple of callers, Bob and Wayne, but if you'd like to join us and have a car question, now's the time. 602-508-0960. 508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. Tom was a guest our first hour. Action Auto is a full-service shop that served the Deer Valley area since 1983. Located on the northwest corner of I-17 and Deer Valley, Action Auto is a family-owned business that prides itself accurate repairs, reasonable prices, and they use factory-recommended intervals for maintenance services they provide. Otherwise, they don't make up their own, if you get my drift. Their technicians are ASE certified and master certified, and they get the job done right. They're a TechNet service center, and they are rated A+ at the Better Business Bureau. So Tom and his gang at Action Auto, Deer Valley and I-17, if you don't have a shop, give them a try. I promise you'll be happy. Let's go to the phones. Bob, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
How you doing? I've got a 2005 Honda Accord with about 75,000 miles on it. And I've put all new brakes all the way around. It brakes, rotors, everything, new tires. About a year ago, I started having problems in the front end, shaking.
Okay.
I brought it to the mechanic. You know, he turned the rotors again and said there was, a wheel was out of balance, put a weight on it, seemed fine. But it was never perfect. When I accelerate between 55 and 75 miles an hour, it shakes terrible as long as I'm on the gas. As soon as I let off the gas, it stops.
Okay.
I hit the gas again, it'll start. And same thing with braking.
Okay. There are so many places to go. I'm going to just think out loud. I want you to start the car up, set the parking brake, and just leave it on flat, level ground. And I want you to get outside the car, roll down the passenger window, but I want you outside the car. And with your right hand, I want you to shake the steering wheel left and right. And with your left hand, I want you to touch the driver's side front tire. And I want absolute synchronization between the steering wheel and the movement of that left front tire. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I want you to do the other side. Now, unless you're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you're not going to reach the steering wheel and touch the right front. This is where you're going to need help. You're just going to have somebody wrap their finger around and stick their index finger up in the air so you can watch them turn the steering wheel. And you want to make sure, if you have a steering wear problem, a tie rod end that's bad or a wheel bearings that's bad, the shake you describe is exactly the symptom.
Okay.
Now, as far as the brake shutter is concerned, where he made it better but didn't make it perfect, I think, does your Honda have disc on the rear?
Yes. Okay. Yes, four discs.
All right. How does it adjust? Did it have a parking brake cable that went to this caliper, or do you know how to adjust the rear brakes?
I think they self-adjust when you go in reverse.
Okay.
Was my thought.
Well, that's drum brakes, and that's from the 60s and 70s, but that's not the case on your
deal. Oh, okay.
But here's what I want you to try. I want you to drive it this weekend, and then when you get home, I want you to put in park and leave it running, turn the air on, whatever you want to do. And I want you to grab a hold of the parking brake, and I want you to pull it up and down about 20 times. And
yeah.
Then I want you to apply the brake pedal and do the same thing. Then I want you to go drive it. And I want to know, is the brake pedal different? And if you say to me, Mark, I put it in park,
two
the
minutes.
Motor was running, I didn't have my foot on the brake, and I grabbed a hold of the parking brake, either I'm going to pull it up or I'm going to do it with my foot, however you got it, but I'm going to fan it 20 times, and then I let go, and then I put my foot on the brake, and I fanned it 20 more times, and then you had me drive it, and I could tell the difference immediately. If that's the case, then the rear brakes are falling out of adjustment. They're overheating the front brakes because the fronts are trying to stop this car because the rears aren't helping them. You just put the rear brakes back in adjustment, so now we might have to go in and cut the rotors again.
Gotcha. You know, that makes perfect sense, because sometimes I'll get like a whining noise, like a hydrostatic transmission when you're slowing down.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, in the front brakes, you hear kind of go,
Yeah. It's something that, but it could be suspension, it could be wheel bearings, it could be slop in the steering assembly, it could be the rack bushings are out of it. There's just so much to do, but I want you to focus on making sure that the steering wheel and the two front tires work in complete synchronization, and if they don't, you got to fix that first. Now, you got rack and pinion on that, so it's not like you got a center link and a bunch of stuff. You've got the rack is mounted to the frame or the body with two rubber mounts. You got two tie rod ends, and that's all you got. So the worst thing that can happen is the two tie rod ends are bad, or one of them's bad, and you probably ought to have it aligned too. And you're going to, if you have to do steering work, you're going to have it aligned anyway. All righty?
Right. Thank you very much.
You betcha, Bob. Wayne, I can't get you until after this break, but I promise that I will on the other side of the break. So gear, make, and model, and tell me what car you got, and I'll get you handled. Anybody else? We got open lines, 508-0960, 602. 508-0960. And then women, you stay tuned, because I'm going to tell you about a gift that my wife got me. And Father's Day's in June, I guess. And you might want to try this, because it's pretty neat. So we'll be right after this. Well, it's 11:44, and we're winding down our second hour of Under the Hood. We talk about cars every Saturday, 10 to noon, right here on 960 The Patriot. I want to talk to you real quick about if your car is wrecked or damaged. I want to tell you that I'm looking out for you when I tell you that I personally do not use the shop that the insurance company suggests me go see. And I'll tell you why. There's lots of body shops that 90% or 100% of their business is derived from the deal, or from the insurance companies. It might be just one. It could be a couple. But 100% of their livelihood depends on insurance companies. So here's the scenario. Hey, Mark, that core support that holds a radiator in that Honda, that thing's really expensive. Are you sure you just can't kind of beat that out just a little bit and you know, just kind of make it work? Because you could save me a whole lot of money, Mark, and I'm the adjuster for the insurance company. And then Mark says, and so ask yourself, what's Mark going to say? Don't you want the body shop to be your advocate? You don't want nobody to sell you down the river. The idea is that the body shops that are beholden to the insurance companies, that can and sometimes does happen. So, if you want my advice, Phoenix Body Works is a good example. Greg May, the owner, he's going to be your advocate if you have an insurance claims. They derive most of their business from the public. So, they're not beholden to insurance companies, but they're very insurance company friendly. They know how to work with your insurance company. They're going to make sure your car's put back the way it was, on time, at an affordable price, quality parts and all. So it's important to repair your vehicle to its pre-accident condition. Phoenix Body Works has been on my list for a long time, and they've done a really good job. So they serve Anthem, New River, North Phoenix. They're located at 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley, and you can stop by anytime you want, Monday through Friday, and they're open a half a day on Saturdays. That's Phoenix Body Works. Wayne, you're up next, buddy. What can I do for you?
Mine is more theoretical, but it's based upon experience. So let's say 2002 Dodge Grand Caravan, 3.3 liter engine, 145,000 miles. What is your recommendation for people like me who choose to drive a little bit older cars but take good care of them in terms of changing radiator hoses and heater hoses so you don't, you know, start on a trip over to Disneyland and end up frying the engine on the way because a heater hose or a radiator hose went?
Okay. I'm going to tell you what I changed when my mom was alive. I changed hers between 75 and 80,000, and I always did it before the summer, so I did it in April. And I wanted her to go through the summer with a really top-notch cooling system, because all the towing companies and everybody will tell you that tire problems and cooling system problems is the number one and the number two problem that cars are broke down on the freeway. So 75,000-80,000 miles, do it right before the summer so you can go through summer with a really good feeling that you've got all new rubber underneath the engine. And I also put the upper hose and the lower hose and some heater hoses in the back of her trunk in the tire well area, because if she blew an upper hose, Mom couldn't change it, but maybe somebody that would stop to help my mom had a screwdriver and could. And he'd say, "You don't happen to have the old hose, do you?" And Mom goes, "Yeah, I do. It's in the trunk." So I always put the old hoses in my customers' cars so that they have a backup. They can throw them away if they want. I'm just doing what I think they should do. And some of them say, I can't afford the room. So I understand. That help you out?
Well, it does. Now, let me just say the reason I asked the question, because I already know that.
Okay.
And I do that. But I have to say that there are so many women that I've met who've experienced a problem like that. And they're not as mechanically minded, and they need to know after 75 or 80,000 miles, preventative maintenance will save them $3,000 if they'll spend $150 and change the coolant and the hoses.
Stay away from the door.
I understand that.
Anyway.
But the problem with it is what I heard you just say is, Mrs. Jones, if you don't change your hoses right now at 75 or 80,000 miles, there's a good possibility that you could cause $3,000 worth of damage to your engine when you burn the head gaskets out of it on your way over to California to see your kids. Wayne, people see that for what it is. It's scare tactics. I agree with you. I think the better alternative is just bring it to their attention and say, this is how I'd do it if it were my car. This is what we think it's appropriate. And we don't think you should try to squeeze more than about four summers here out of a set of hoses and belts. But I agree with you, Wayne. I don't disagree. It's just we can't say stuff like that for fear it's going to be perceived as a scare tactic. And, of course, that makes us bad.
And I understand that. And that's why I'm saying it for you. Because
okay.
I've had that experience, and I know what it is, and I choose to drive older cars but take care of them, and that's a weak link in the chain. Nobody thinks about it, and the manual doesn't tell you when to change radiator hoses heater hoses.
You're right. You're absolutely
right.
So
you don't know that. You don't know the consequences of something that is relatively inexpensive. So I'm just recommending to everyone on the air, they look at their car and think about that, because it's knowledge that they need to have. Everyone needs to know that.
Let me ask you a question on a different subject. When do you think that 145,000 miles is going to give up the ghost?
Well, the last time I had any problem with the engine was never.
Okay.
And let me say this. This is now the seventh 3.3-liter engine that I've had in Chrysler products, and they're bulletproof.
Okay.
And I've never pulled the head on any of them except one. When I had a head gasket failure, it was peeing out the side of the engine. And when we got the head off, we found out originally when the engine was manufactured, somebody had dropped the gasket and it was creased across there.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
That's where it gave up.
Okay. The reason I ask you that.
Gasket anyway.
Okay. And I that's great. I'm going to tell you that 90% of the motors we replace, and we probably do one or two a week, 90% of the motors we replace have been overheated. And 10% or 8% have been run low on oil, and the other 2% have just been worn out. So the message there, and you agree with this, the message there is if you don't overheat them and run them low on oil, then that thing will last a very long time.
That's
and
right.
The beginning of the end is really oil consumption. That's when we start drinking oil. That's the beginning of the end. But if you overheat them, that is the end.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much, Wayne.
That's the biggest risk.
I appreciate your call. Thank you very
much.
Thank you. Tim, you're up next. How can I help you?
Down to Empire Cat. And I'll tell you what, the people down there are great. I had an oil analysis done. And I'm going to run through some real quick figures because they're so astronomically low that they're almost not worth even discussing. But we got copper 1, iron 5, chrome 0, aluminum 3, silicone 12, lead 0, sodium 57, tin 0, nickel 2, barium 0, silver 0, zinc 917. That's a little high. This is parts per million, by the way. I know you know that. Boron 58. Calcium was 2263, and that's one that I kind of wonder why it's a little high. And then phosphorus at 807. I mean, these are astronomically low figures, but why are we 2283 on calcium?
Okay. And you know what? If I was in your shoes, I would simply call Bonnie over there at the oil lab, and I would say to her, I see my values. I mean, I'm allowed 100 to 700 or whatever. And I see my values, but I want to know what is the root cause for calcium and phosphorus. I think the phosphorus is going to be diesel, a byproduct of diesel consumption, I think. But I have no idea where the calcium is. Do you have one in there for glycol or antifreeze?
Yeah, I do. I believe I do. It just says N, no.
Okay, all right. And that means there's no antifreeze in there, so the calcium wouldn't come from the water that partners with the antifreeze. So I don't know the answer to that, but if you call the lab and ask them what's the source of calcium, they'll tell you. And
okay, but I mean, these are pretty astronomically low numbers, I would say.
Well,
I mean,
They are, but what we don't have time to do, Tim, is give them the bracket first. Let's just take the first two. What's the highest number that's acceptable, and then what number did you have?
Right.
I mean, tell me now, though.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't say that. That's the problem. It just gives me numbers. It doesn't give me any variance.
Aren't they graphed? Isn't it graphed there, though?
No, it's not, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's not. I mean, it's just a first-time sample. The sample, no trends established, wear pattern normal. This is on a gas motor, by the way, not a diesel. So, I guess the best thing to do is call her. They're so busy there. I mean, gosh, I hate to bother them. I mean, they really are occupied.
All right. Well,
they
how about this?
They got samples.
Okay.
I'm here to
Google.
You know?
Just Google it. Oil sample, presence of calcium. Why?
Okay.
You know, and try that because that works a lot. That works really well for me. I appreciate it, Tim. Thank you very much, Tom. You're up next. How can I help you, Tom?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. I got you on speaker. My question is, I have a 1996-98 Olds Elite.
Okay.
This car, for the last couple of years, I'd be traveling. All of a sudden, suddenly there's no gas. Like, I'm not getting any gas. At first, I thought I was out of gas because my gas needle was almost on empty, so I got gas. It started up. Everything was fine. Did it again. And I noticed it was happening while the needle was at the low end. Put gas in it, and it started doing it even while I had a full tank of gas. My needle is not accurate anymore, so I keep enough gas in it. But it does the same thing. I'll either be driving, all of a sudden, spitter, sputter, like it's not getting any gas while I'm accelerating. Back off, pump gas pedal, and suddenly it will re-engage, and then I go. Sometimes it happens when I'm starting the car. Now it's gotten to the point where if I stop the car, turn it off, try to start it up and get going again, it's up to maybe 30, 40 minutes. I got to let it sit, and it might start again. I've had the car to the shop several times. It has sat there for a week, week and a half at a time, and my mechanics are saying,
okay.
It wouldn't do it when I have it.
No, hold on.
Uh-huh.
This is easy.
Okay.
You just need to rent a gauge. Say to the garage, look, guys, how much will you charge me to rent your gauge? Attach it, bring it up under the crack of the hood, tape it to the front of the windshield, let me monitor my own fuel pressure. Tell me what the spec is. The spec is 40. Tim, the spec is 40. When it gets down to about 28, the motor's going to die. You're driving down the road, it's 40 PSI. 40 PSI, all of a sudden it starts sputtering, you're giving it gas, but it's still 40 PSI. You don't have a fuel problem.
Okay.
You got a timing chain problem. You got a crankshaft sensor problem. You got a camshaft sensor. You got an ignition module breaking down. We have to determine spark or fuel. And until we get to first base, which is spark or fuel, we are dead in the water. So just say to them, most shops will do that for $75. They'll say, we're going to put the gauge on there. Don't let anybody steal it, Tim. We're going to tape it up, and you monitor it, and I'm going to put a little mark there where I want it, and then I don't want it to vary up or down more than 10 pounds. And I want to know when it starts acting up, where the fuel pressure's at, and I want you to bring it back in 48 hours. I'm going to install it and take it out and loan it to you for 2 days for $75. Most shops will do that. That's what I would do if I were you. All right, ladies, June's around the corner. This is what my wife did for me. I have never had custom shirts. So my wife found this guy. He says, I can fit anybody. If I can get a measuring tape around you, I can fit you. He says everybody has an aspect of fit that irritates them. He can fix it. For me, it was my neck. I have a 19.5-inch neck. The details are unlimited. My wife bought me 5 shirts. Now, they fit perfectly in every way, shape, or form. They're all Western shirts. They have contrasting buttons, buttonholes, and button threads. They have contrasting and coordinated fabrics. They have cuffs, French cuffs, with fold-back contrasting fabrics. They have all this stuff. But the bottom line is I've never had a shirt that fit my shoulders, fit my chest, fit my belly, fit my arms. I've never. And I feel really, really good. If you're interested in having your husband fitted for a couple of nice shirts, just email me at mark@marksalem.com, and I will put you together with this gentleman. I got to tell you, this is one of the nicest gifts I've ever been given, and it's something I would have never done for myself. I'm doing a commercial for him for free because he did such a great job in fitting me, working with us, and I think I have 3 or 4 shirts that are just absolutely perfect. Now, those of you guys, you'll know that sometimes that upper seam that's supposed to be high on your shoulders, down halfway down your arm, is because you need a big neck and stuff. That's my problem. I mean, my sleeves were always too long, and the shirt sagged off my shoulders. But my wife tells me I'm handsome again, and it's all because of her. So mark@marksalem.com, and I'll tell you who it is. Until then, I'll see you next Saturday. Please don't drink and drive. Please put your phone down. You have no idea the pain that you're likely to cause somebody if you hurt somebody because you're looking at your stupid phone. Don't drink and drive. I'll see you next Saturday right here.